Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Third hour here on the show, Tiki and Tierney. Busy Thursday coming to you from our studios, the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. No shortage of great topics today. The opt-out has come and gone for the NFL. Tre'Davious White, the biggest name, you know, really contemplating, seemed to be kind of torn with his decision. He's going to play for the Bills this year, so Bills Mafia is fired up. Teague and I spent a lot of time on the Lakers, who continue to look very disjointed, very uninspiring, very stale on offense. You know, got knocked around by the Thunder. Previous game, the Raptors smoked them. Obviously, we've kept an eye on Tiger, -2, the first round of the PGA Championship. The baseball story from the previous segment about these newly inserted COVID-19 protocols. Then you have the Raiders here, Teague. Then you have the Raiders with, it's kind of a strange way to motivate the team or to get their attention. But what the Raiders did with John Gruden, basically feigning that he had the virus on Zoom, was kind of weird.
It was very kind of weird. So for those who missed the story, John Gruden had all of his players on a Zoom call, but it wasn't John Gruden who took the call. It was his special teams coordinator, Rich Bisaccia, who basically said, John's in the hospital. We're worried about him, yada, yada, yada. And they did this. He obviously wasn't in the hospital. They did this to get their attention about the dangers of the coronavirus and what it could do to you. Now, the question I have immediately is, who the hell needs to be told what the dangers of the coronavirus are? Have you not been watching what's going on in the world, the number of deaths that have resulted from this, and the unexpected, complications that come from this? I get what they're doing. They're trying to make it immediate and put it in these guys' heads. But I'm pretty sure, unless you have been under a rock, literally under a rock for the last 90 days, really longer than that. It's been probably 4 months. 5 months, you know the dangers of the coronavirus. So I get it. It's kind of fun, but I think it was unnecessary for a lot of reasons, even though it's being reported that it did have an impact on these guys.
I think it's ridiculous. I mean, if you want to really try to stun somebody and the reason you're doing this is for effect, obviously, to illuminate the seriousness of a disease that I really shouldn't need illumination at this point. I mean, here we are. It's August, and, depending upon where you live, things are still kind of messy. But the way they did it is it's unprofessional. Mm-hmm. If you want to really shock the senses, come out with, a pair of lungs that are scarred, the residual damage from the disease. Like, there's a way to do that where young athletes who are feeling invulnerable would look at an image and say, man, that just made it a little bit more real than it was before I walked in or before I logged on to the Zoom session.
Yeah.
Tell them that your coach is basically hanging by a thread. It's a very strange way of getting that message across.
Yeah.
I don't really like it.
I don't think it's motivating. I don't think it's informative, but apparently guys took to it to an extent. But again, without it being real, it's kind of pointless. If you ask me, I'd be annoyed. If I was sitting in that media group, I'd be annoyed by this. Not that it's going to have any impact on my relationship with Coach Gruden or the team or any of that. But it's just like, what's the point?
Yeah, why are you playing this game?
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like you're playing games with it, in a sense that I don't know. You don't need to. Right? I mean, you don't need to play games with this virus at all.
I wouldn't think so, Teak. Do you have a story? Like when you were playing, it was different. It was not that it was that different and that long ago, but certainly Coughlin was old school. I can't imagine he had a ton of fun. But Fossil ever do anything wacky with a projector or some sort of message? Anything you remember?
No, I mean, most coaches were so straightforward. You know, it's and Gruden's quirky like this, and it's why you either love him or you hate him, right? It's one of those. He's one of those guys that you get. And you get his humor, and you get his meaning, and he says, you know, these cliches, and he speaks in, I don't know, this. It's hard to explain it unless you've met him and had conversations with him, where he's like stilted in his talk, and he's joking with you, but he's talking dead seriously, and you're like, dude, are you messing with me? Are you being real? Mm-hmm. But he's motivating all the time. And so you either get it and you like it, or you're like, dude, you're full of it, and it turns you off. So this is one of those moments that I would look at and say, come on, coach, that's unnecessary. You don't need to do that to make me understand the importance of the coronavirus.
You think the Raiders become, and again, I don't necessarily mean this year because, you know, who knows what we're looking at. There's going to be no fans in the stadium anyway, the new stadium, which looks absolutely sweet. Yep. Do you believe, here we are a couple of years into Gruden's tenure, what does he have, 7 years left on his deal, whatever it is, do you believe the Raiders become a world-class organization? Like, if we were to fast-forward in to, like, you know, 20 years from now, and we kind of look back on the John Gruden era, do you have the early feel that it's trending toward what they thought they were paying for? A little short of it? Where do you think we are a couple of years in?
Well, I think they play hard. And I think that John Gruden's energy, while still high, is not what it was when he was in Tampa. You know, and that's probably because the player is different, as much as it is about John Gruden just being a decade older when he last coached. Like, the player doesn't get motivated by the rah-rah as much anymore. I mean, some guys do, like the maniacs. Every football team, hell, any sports team is going to have that maniac who gets riled up by screaming and playing heavy metal and, you know, just, you know, headbanging, you know, old school. But I think the majority of players aren't that way any longer. And so as a result, John Gruden just had to change. And I think it's adaptability. I think it's ultimately going to be successful for him. But at the end of the day, the Raiders got to get players. Now, they're on their way to doing that. I think Josh Jacobs is a really good player. I think they've done well over the last couple of years in the draft. But it ultimately won't matter how good John Gruden is until he has good players around him, particularly at the quarterback position.
Yeah. And we were talking about Derek Carr yesterday where, you know, he came out. He's basically said, I'm tired of being disrespected.
Yeah.
And, you know, on one hand, you're like, okay, good for you. Stand up. I think part of the perception is that, you know, remember some of his teammates called them, what they call him, scared? What was that a couple of years? What happened? What was he framed as? What was it again? They said he was crying.
Yeah, but I think it was because he was hurt and he didn't want to come. I can't remember the circumstances. Right,
it wasn't favorable, though.
No, it was almost like he was soft. It was like he was soft.
Correct.
And not willing to push through something or something like that.
That's the gist of it, if I recall as well. I think you're right.
And at the same time, though, I kind of don't blame him because he was in a contract year. So you put your money in front of like your team in a sense. But ultimately, that loses your respect, right?
Oh yeah.
It's. Their construction is okay. Let's put it that. It's
well,
okay.
That's what I'm saying. Here we are. Yeah. We're a couple of years into Gruden's 10-year deal, and in all probability, don't have the quarterback of the future.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So here it is. He denies crying after injury, pushes back report on a fractured relationship with his teammates.
Yeah. Now, thanks, D-Cell, for shipping that over on the Slack channel. That was an old USA Today article.
Yeah.
So in all probability, unless he turns Mariota into his reclamation project, which is not inconceivable.
He could.
But I'm saying it's not inconceivable. That could happen. But somewhere along the way, there's going to be a reboot at the quarterback position. And, you know, whether that's year four or year five of a 10-year deal, not an ideal way to hit the halfway point for a team that's done nothing thus far.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, in all probability, you have a new quarterback and you kind of, in a way, starting over.
Yeah, but I mean, I like Hunter Renfro, the kid from Clemson.
He's good.
He's not your like burner game breaker, but he's reliable.
Yep.
Obviously, he's fifth round. I think he was fifth rounder.
He's like Cole Beasley.
Yep. Henry Ruggs, they drafted. Mm-hmm. I like him. He's a burner. Tight end, they're old. Right?
No. Their tight end's phenomenal.
Jason
the kid
Witten.
Walther's great.
Well, Darren Waller and Jason Witten.
Forget about Jason Witten. Walther's a star.
They got five tight ends on their squad.
They only need one. His name is Waller.
They're playing two. I hear you. They're playing two tights. Okay. We'll see as they change. Mm. But they do have some talent on this team.
Yes, they do. Offensive line's good.
It's just not fully talented, it feels like. I don't know why I say that.
Because of the quarterback. I guarantee if there were different optics and different feelings toward the quarterback position, because
you're probably right.
The offensive line is good. The safety that they drafted who got hurt in camp, Abrams.
Yep.
He's going to be good, most people think.
Yep, Abrams.
Yep, Abrams. I think that if the quarterback position was perceived differently for the Raiders, there would be an inordinate amount of hype in terms of what they could accomplish this season. But because it's Derek Carr, who's fine, he's just not, necessarily beyond fine enough for Raider fans, there's a reluctance to say this team's ready to go.
Yeah, do you think they're lucky this year, BT? Because think about going to a new a ballpark or whatever, a stadium, going to a new stadium in a new city, and there's so many entertainment options in Las Vegas, so many. And in order to be relevant, you got to be good. They kind of are getting lucky that no fans, or at least a limited number of fans, are going to be allowed to go to the games. So if they're bad after this move, given the offseason and everything that's happened, they moved, and obviously they had no offseason because of the coronavirus. They're virtual in a sense, and now they're starting to get together, and who knows what's going to happen with the quarterback. I mean, they're almost lucky that their first season in Vegas is not going to be under the microscope of fans. It could be a missed opportunity, but it actually could be a blessing.
I don't see it that way at all. I first of all, even if they're 1-15 and their talent is through the roof to be one, I mean, I'm just saying that for effect.
Yep.
Even if they're horrendous, that initial connection to the city, like the Golden Knights, obviously going to the Cup. I mean, that's going to help, but that connection, it's the first impression. You only get one chance, and you want to connect on the most grassroots level. The way you do that is to have people watching you play football.
Yeah,
I know,
but they're not going to be there this year. That's my point.
But I don't think that's a good thing, is what I'm saying. I think that stinks. I think you basically you're hitting pause for a year.
Yeah.
On laying the foundation
to get better. Where do you think they're finishing?
I think they're anywhere between, I would say, 8-8 on the low end.
Yeah.
Maybe not 7-9 on the low end, because the Chargers are talented and Kansas City is obviously great.
That's right.
So you never know what happens in the division. I would say absolute low end 7-9, and I could, if they went 9-7 or 10-6, I wouldn't be that surprised. I think they're pretty good.
Yeah,
I do. I think they're a pretty good team.
Yeah, we'll see. But they started in an odd way. They started in an odd way by having a Zoom meeting with John Gruden, being in a hospital, which makes no sense. But I guess if John thinks it's going to work, I guess it'll work. But he's quirky, so I guess you accept it for what he is.
Let's see. A little further, Santa sent this. I want to make sure we didn't get the context wrong here. All right, so this was from October 23rd, 2018. Darren Carr tweeted, hit 16 times in that game, broken pinky finger, throwing hand, sprained thumb, throwing hand, knee sprain, MCL grade 2, high ankle sprain, grade 3, wow, concussion grade 1, chest ribs bruised, 3 broken bones in his back, broken fibula, bone in his leg, 2 games missed because they made him. So he wrote, don't even waste your time with this big bro. On the ground, I yelled, get me up, get me. Then I got to the sidelines and I yelled again, not one tear, not one time. There's the truth. People will click on it because it sounds crazy, but stop playing with me. I want to tell you, when he defends himself with vigor. I respect that.
But that's not him. That's his brother, right?
Well, I think the first tweet Well, it says on the ground, I yelled, get
me
up.
Oh, yeah, so maybe it is.
I know Darren's his brother, but what I'm saying is, I thought the first tweet that I read listing all the injuries was from Darren, his brother.
Gotcha.
I thought the quote that I read was from Derek.
Gotcha.
And it was. That's what I thought. Okay. Yeah, he's not afraid to defend himself, which you have to be.
Yeah, just like, otherwise, get off my back.
Otherwise, Teak, if you don't defend yourself, people will leave you for roadkill.
You're right.
As we will, they will just roll you over and not look back. So I respect that. Now he's got to perform. All right, coming up, Larry Bird's back in the NBA, and he's playing center. What? Popovich. Popovich has to be getting a little bored. I don't know. For him to say this is weird. Popovich, with the unlikeliest of comparisons, player comps. We'll get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227. Brought to you by GEICO. Do you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? And that is on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Just visit GEICO.com to learn more. One thing we know about Pop, well, a couple things we know about Pop, Greg Popovich, outstanding coach of the Spurs, is he's got very little time for small talk, right, during the interviews. He fluctuates between incredibly insightful and incredibly ornery, depending upon the day. He's not afraid to speak his mind on political issues. He's front and center with all that stuff. But one thing Pop very rarely does is speak in hyperbolic terms in terms of player comps. You know, he just doesn't do it. So when he says that Nikola Jokic, the outstanding slimmed down big man for the Nuggets who could pass and he could do it all, he's got an old school game, not above the rim, even though he's a tall 7'1", whatever he is. He's very old school. Footwork is imperative to his success. When he drops not just a Larry Bird comparison, he said he's a reincarnation of both Larry Bird and Moses Malone. Now, the Moses Malone one, to me, almost makes a little more sense than the Larry Bird one.
Yeah, I don't get Larry Bird.
But I don't think a lot of people agree with what I just said. I think a lot, probably because of skin color. You know, you just kind of associate white-white or black-black player comp. And a lot of people, it's hard to deviate from that, even though you can if you aren't married to stereotypes. But Moses Malone, now granted, we saw Moses as an aging player, right?
I mean, he was mid-late 30s when we were really paying attention to him.
Yeah, like that 83 championship team with the Sixers, he was, I'm guessing, maybe 31.
No, he was 27.
Oh, he was that young. Okay.
Yeah, he was young.
But I was 9 and you were 8.
Yeah, I wasn't into basketball then. I didn't get into basketball until I got a little bit older.
No, I got you. That was a great team with Dr. J, Mo Cheeks, and Tony, et cetera. But, and before that, with the Rockets, I can't ever say that I recollect seeing him play. And I do remember him with the Bullets. Where else did he play?
He played in Houston, Philly, Washington, Atlanta for three seasons, then Milwaukee. And then, and then the last two, he kind of just, even though he didn't play, he only played 11 games the second season in Milwaukee, and then Philly, and then finished up in San Antonio.
Okay, so.
Well, there you go. That's why.
Well, yeah, exactly, right? Hey, he played for the Spurs.
He played for Pop.
That's why Pop is giving him the praise here. But the thing about Moses, and who was quite conceivably the best offensive rebounder in the history of the game, I don't think many people would argue that. Maybe you can, but whatever, for the sake of moving forward, just put say he's either 1, 2, or 3. For my money, probably 1, but I guess you could debate it. But he wasn't above the rim. Of all the video that I've seen, and granted, it's, you know, not from his Rocket days, but I feel like I didn't really see Moses Malone dunk a whole lot.
No, you don't, because
wasn't a great athlete.
Well, the game was also fundamental back then. You know what I mean?
Daryl Dawkins dunked.
Well, yeah, because Chaka Thunder wanted to bring rims down. You know what I mean? He probably got paid per
dunk.
He probably got paid per rim he brought down, but not 6'10", you know, lumberers. But you're right. He wasn't a super athlete. He wasn't jumping out of the gym at 6'10". It was all fundamentals for him. That's what made him so good. Mm-hmm. Positioning and watching, you know, seeing how the ball was careening off the rim, things of that nature, like Dennis Rodman did, like Charles Barkley did at shorter sizes. But Malone played that way as a big, big man. But you're right. He wasn't a great athlete. So maybe there's that comparison. But the Moses Malone side of this comparison with Nikola Jokic is nearly as like alarming as Larry Bird. First of all, Larry Bird is known as a knockdown bullseye shooter. Jokic shoots 30%, 32%.
That's why I like the Moses comp better.
I don't even see that. And forget the comp. Like, I know Larry's a legend, but does the current NFL basketball player want to be compared to Larry Bird?
Does a current NBA player?
Yes.
Did you just say, does he want to be compared to Larry Bird?
Yes.
He would be honored.
Do you want to be comped to Larry Bird?
Yes.
And today's athlete?
Yes.
Today's super athlete?
100% yes.
Because all I remember Larry doing is shooting, talking trash and shooting. You know what I mean? And
well,
I don't know if that's the NBA right now.
Well, Larry Bird was one of the best passers of all time. Larry Bird was one of the best weak side defenders of all time. Larry Bird was an elite rebounder for his position as a non-center. Larry Bird is one of the five best players of all time.
I don't disagree.
So why wouldn't somebody want to be? Why? Because he didn't jump high?
Because if Larry Bird was playing now, what would he be?
He would be better because you can't play aggressively.
Yeah.
He would take 20 free throws a night.
Look,
and he would have grown up shooting the three-pointer.
I think it's easy to appreciate Larry Bird. Because I'm not saying that. You're making it seem like I'm disrespecting him.
You just asked me. Why would anybody want to be compared to Larry Bird?
I think it's easy to recognize someone who is great, but not want to be that person. You know what I mean? Larry Bird had a great game, but I don't think that today's athlete is looking at Larry Bird as their inspiration. I just don't think that that's the case.
Well, okay. I just want to make sure. Do I think that, you know, the young black player is in the schoolyards of, you know, not that you just have to, you know, you could come from the suburbs too, but, you know, New York.
Or the white player. I'm talking
true.
About,
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
just talking New, about anybody.
No, right but it's now. 80% African American. That's why I say.
Yeah.
Like New York or D.C. where it's a hotbed, or Philly or Oakland, California, or L.A. or all these hot spots for basketball. Do I think that they're in the park saying, Bird?
No, of course they're not.
But if they ever make it to the league and they're sitting down with, you know, Barkley or Kenny Smith or Chris Shaq, say, you know what, young buck, I got to tell you, I see a lot of Larry Bird in your game. That is the ultimate compliment, and that player is pumped and validated like that.
That's not what I'm saying.
Validated.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying throw it out as a comparison. That's great. That's what Pop did. Hey, Jokic isn't just – he's a Larry Bird. Okay, great. That's a compliment. But that's not what I ask.
It's the highest compliment.
I understand that.
Okay.
I'm not talking about the compliment side of this. I'm talking about who wants to be the next Larry Bird. That's a different conversation. I don't think that Nikola Jokic was sitting in Europe saying, Bird. He was probably going, Dirk, you know, right? Or,
probably
you know
Dirk.
What I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just, like, I love Larry Bird. I think his game, more importantly, I love his trash talk. Like, I love reading the stories, or more importantly, hearing the stories.
Legendary.
Of how he just would school people, mostly with his mouth, and then beat them with, you know, with the shot. And they were more athletic with him. Dominique Wilkins talks about this all the time. Dominique could run circles around Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Backwards, he probably could, athletically.
Mm-hmm.
But Larry Bird would trash talk him into being beat. You know what I mean? That comparison would be great, but these guys don't talk like that anymore.
No, they don't. There's
but
not
I,
a...
I just don't know. I mean, who wants to be Larry Bird? They appreciate the comparison, but I honestly don't see the comparison in anybody.
I also think, you know, I mean, and I'm saying this with a smile, but it needs to be said. I don't think now. I'll just take the white guy now, right? I don't think there's a white guy that says, man, I forget about being as good as Bird. That's one thing, but nobody aspires to. And no offense, Larry, if you're watching, nobody aspires to look like Larry Bird.
Yeah,
I mean, nobody wants to have no muscle, pale, you know, shorts that are size and a half too small. You know, I mean,
and that is my, that's the only point I was making. You know what I mean? You look at some of the legends,
but he's not talking about the appearance.
I know. I was flipping the conversation because who cares what Popovich says? Jokic looks or you know reminds him of, because I don't know if I agree.
But I think it's interesting to hear Pop say that. Listen, say, not everybody loves Pop, and whoever loves him loves him. Whoever doesn't can't stand him. Pop is who he is. Mm-hmm. He's unapologetic. He's got his strong positions. Some love it, some hate it. But Pop, even if you don't respect or you have to respect, but even if you don't like Pop, this is such rare territory for him to engage in. Like, as a basketball, I'm not going to say historian, that's ridiculous. As a basketball nut, as a basketball junkie, I hear Greg Popovich talk about Jokic, and I've been saying on the show he's trending towards top five player for a while. Like, this is not new. I've known how great this guy is, Jokic. For Popovich, greatest coach of all time, along with Phil Jackson and Red Auerbach and Pat Riley, to sit there and say he's like Moses Malone and Larry Bird is among the most interesting basketball things I've ever heard. True. I mean, it strikes me as such a unique, rare, like out of the box. It's comp.
I just don't know if it's right. And then, look, Pop knows better than me. I mean, he's an icon, legend in the sport, Greg Popovich. He knows it much, I mean, more than his pinky than I know in my entire body about basketball. So maybe he's right, but I just don't see it. That's all I'm saying.
Well, let's hear it before we get the update. We told you what Pop said. Here's how he actually said it. So the Moses Malone was, I guess, obviously a different part. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it wasn't like it was tongue-in-cheek. You know, he does everything. He's amazing. And he is. So this goes back, you know, Teague still doesn't think – you're not giving the Nuggets a chance to get to the NBA Finals, are you? Still?
I'm not saying they're a legitimate contender this year.
Oh, man.
He's not.
All right. No, we'll see. I got you.
We'll see.
Different strokes, different folks. So we got Axe update. Hey, Ack, you got me real quick? Come here.
I got you.
Oh, wow. Do we have a delay? Say something real quick.
Hello there, buddy. How are
good.
You?
Great. He sounds terrific. No delay. Malone, you've got a couple of years on us here. Malone as an athlete, not as a player. We know he was a great rebounder.
Carl or Moses?
No, I'm sorry. Moses Malone as an just as an athlete on a scale of 1 to 10, 7? Sound about right? Athlete.
I'd probably go a little more because he was so physically dominant, and he was so strong, and in his early days, he had a little more leap to his game than he did later. But he also kept him. I mean, look how long he played too. So 20 years, the endurance that he had at that position at that time, I'd go a little higher for him.
Fair enough. Can you imagine him when the old man strength really kicked in? Oh my God, trying to move him off the blocks? No thanks. Let's get Axe update. We've got the blast after that. Axe going to tell you what's happening with golf, how Tiger did, and all that stuff. Ackerman's update right now. Here's Rich. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, back wrapping it up. Got a couple of hours to watch golf here as the day turns into night on the East Coast. Obviously, three-hour difference out west. I'm watching a little Sergio. Here's a DeChambeau tee shot. Boy, he just looks so – he just pounds the ground. He is out of his mind. Let's see if they have a shot tracer. 190 ball speed, apex 131. How far does it carry? Nah, only CBS has that, so you're going to have to get that on CBS over the weekend, which you will get rounds 3 and 4 as see who makes the cut coming up all weekend on CBS. We'll play Tiger's post-round assessments in a little bit, but first it's time for the blast. Teak, you ready to roll?
Yep, let's do it.
Okay.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, here we go. So in addition to having interest in wideouts Josh Gordon and A.B., Seattle's reportedly also taking a look at Clay Matthews and Everson Griffin. How badly does Seattle need to make upgrades?
I don't know if they need upgrades per se. I think they're looking for depth here. Their linebacking core is pretty good with Bobby Wagner, who was all pro last year, and even KJ Wright. He's getting a little bit old, but You know, I think Clay Matthews is a good player. I don't know how much he has left in the tank. It was really a financial decision with the Rams letting him go, so he still could play. But I think this is more about depth and less about upgrades per se.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They've got, and I don't know how many teams could really make this statement, they've got among the best at their position in four different spots. I'm going to count head coach. Mm-hmm. Head coach, quarterback, linebacker, and now with Jamal Adams, safety.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good starting point.
Yeah, agreed.
You know?
You're deep everywhere.
Yeah. Now let's see what happens with Metcalf in year two.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're listen, every team could obviously get better. You never know who's going to test positive, COVID, there's going to be depth issues. But their marquee players and positions, they're pretty good. All right, Justin Fields, Buckeyes quarterback, new one, says he wants to beat the brakes off of Michigan. That's a quote. The Buckeyes have won 8 straight. How about this lopsided? Is it really a rivalry, Michigan fans? I'm sorry. You've lost 15 of 16 against the Buckeyes. That is just utterly disgraceful. 15 out of 16? I know they're good, but come on. Can this still be considered an elite rivalry? As much as I mess around with Michigan there, yeah, of course it's an elite rivalry. I mean, you know, come on. What you want to say? USC, Stanford, are fine, and it's good, but it's not this. You want to say Auburn, Bama, terrific. Auburn's fluctuates year to year depending upon what Auburn your team get. You get it, it's great, but the venues are phenomenal. Both over 100,000 seats. Great conference. It's cold usually for the conference championship. It's top shelf. I'd like to see Michigan win a few. But it's top shelf.
When you have rivalries like this, BT, that go back as many decades as this one go back, they stay rivalries no matter what's happening with either one of the programs. Oklahoma, Texas is a prime example. Texas was on bad, you know, turf for a while down there, you know, even at the end of the Mack Brown era and Charlie Strong. And eventually they came back around. And Oklahoma, you know, kind of was the same way. But that game always generates interest between those two schools. And Michigan, Ohio State is more elite than that. So, yeah, it's still an elite rivalry, despite the lack of success of the Wolverines.
Army-Navy, which is top shelf and has no peers. And I'll tell you which rivalry I'm going to be into for a while. You ready?
What's that?
Little Princeton-Harvard.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I will as
AJ
well.
Barber, down the right side. Barber's in the end zone. Tigers win it. The Cubbies have won their 10th game of the year. They did it last night, and they're tied for the best record in baseball with the Twins. Mike, can you check? I don't have it in front of me. I thought I saw this morning Minnesota's plus 30 in run differential already. Plus 30.
I think you're right. I was looking at it earlier.
The Yankees plus 30?
Yeah, the Yankees are plus 15, and the Twins are plus 30.
Plus 30, man. And they hit 308 home runs last year, so we shouldn't be stunned. How much of the success do we put on new skipper David Ross, and how much of the recent struggles we're on Joe Maddon?
I mean, again, this is such an unconventional season, BT. It's really hard to blame anyone one way or the other. So, I mean, am I putting the Cubs' struggles or on Joe Maddon and the recent success on David Ross? No, I think it's circumstance. I think they have a good locker room. Obviously, players are playing well out of the chute. Yep. Now, if they were over 162, would it be sustained? Who knows? But they're playing well given the circumstances. That's really all you can say. Give David Ross credit, but don't blame it on Joe Maddon.
Listen, I think they'd be one of the best teams in baseball, no matter who's in the dugout. Now, I'm not so flippant as to say that, and some said this with the Warriors, that, well, I could coach the Warriors to 50 wins or 60 wins. I'm not sitting here saying that you or I can coach the Cubs to, or can manage to skip the Cubs to, you know, 10 wins here, but they have played kind of a soft schedule, and you do have to incorporate that. Played Cincinnati a bunch, they played the Pirates, played Kansas City, who's terrible. So I'm not saying that they're not going to be good. They are. I had expectations for the Cubbies, but they played a lot of soft teams so far. Let's see what happens when it evens out, which it will. All right, moving on. Number four. Last night, I skipped number three, which is now number four. The Celtics beat the Nets 149-115. Boston, 7 players, double figures. Are the Celtics the most balanced team in the Eastern Conference? That is a very good question. Yes, I mean, they are. They are the most balanced team because they've got more guys that, you know, on an off night from Tatum, you know, one of the stars, can drop 20, can fill it up a little bit. They've got probably the largest collection of defensively sound players that's demanded by and from Brad Stevens. Yeah, yeah. They've got a little size up front with Kanter, which is he's a great offensive rebounder. Yep. He's a great post scorer. I think they. I would say that the answer to that is yeah.
Look, I mean, other than I'm trying to think of other teams that are top five offensive and defensive rating. It's very hard to off the top of my head to think about it.
Where are the Raptors?
The Raptors
are they top five in both?
They might be actually. They're 14th offensively rating, okay. Defensive rating.
Gotcha.
But the Boston Celtics are top five defensive rating, top five offensive rating, and they have three guys that score over 20 points a game, and they're doing this in the bubble right now without Kemba Walker. So yeah, they're the best. They're the most balanced team. Does that mean they're going to win a 7-game series against the Milwaukee Bucks? I don't know. I can't say that, but they are very balanced in every way you think about it.
All right, mentioned a lot of golf today. Jordan Spieth said earlier this week that his number one goal right now is to capture the career Grand Slam, and he came out flying as a young pro. But he hasn't won a PGA Tour event since he took the Open Championship back in 2017. It's been a little drought for Jordan.
Yeah.
Well chronicled. Why do we, or how do we explain the rapid decline the past 3 years? To me, it's very simple.
Yeah.
You know, his putter is just not the same.
That's right.
His short game is not the same, and he's not long enough to mask it. So right. he's not a masher. He's a precision-oriented player who's got to attack pins, and he's got to hit when he stuffs it inside 7, 8, 9, 10 feet. He's got to sink those birds and eagles, and he hasn't been doing that for a while.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's as simple as that. You got to putt, man, and the cliche, right? Drive for show, putt for dough. When you don't do either one really well, you're not winning on the tour. Bryson DeChambeau stole a victory. Not really stole, but he played real enough, especially down the stretch. What was that? The RBC Canadian?
Talking about this past one?
No, the one that he won. Dyson DeChambeau.
No, he won the Rocket Mortgage, the one in
the
Detroit.
Yeah, the Rocket Mortgage in Detroit. So when he won that one, it was because he was out driving everybody and had, you know, basically putting putting on par fours on his second shot. Jordan just can't do that. Right? You know what I mean? And so he can't make up for the mistakes in a short game, meaning his putting game, by hitting the ball farther like other guys can.
Yeah.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
All right. I knew there was another one. The Clippers. The LA Clippers are top five defensive and offensive rating.
Good call. Way to pull that. Not a boy. So we speculated, or as Tiki would say, we hypothesized.
I love
you might drop that on us once more.
Right. I do.
As to when, Tiger's going to bust out the new putter, the new Scotty Cameron, and he did. And he drained the 30-footer on one for birdie. Here's Tiger on the new weapon.
Well, I've been messing around with it for better part of over a year. And it's a little bit longer than my original one, and which makes it a little bit easier on my back. I was able to spend more time practicing. And it's one of the reasons why all the senior tour players never putt with the same length putter as they go on, they move on. It's a little bit harder to bend over. And I putt with my sandwich all the time. And so it's it feels more like my sandwich.
Did he just said I putt with my sandwich all the time?
I think when he's messing around. So like he's doing whatever. He's doing a non-competitive round. He's up on the green. He's just putting with the sandwich. But it makes sense, right? It's odd to think about Tiger as old like that. That he doesn't want to bend over to putt. You know what I mean? But that's the reality. He's only 45, but with all the surgeries that he's had, including the back surgery, I mean, that ages you, dude.
Yeah. DeChambeau just, what a lucky break. He rifled one. Teak, he would have been 30 to 40 yards offline left. He pulled it right away. As soon as he hit it, one hand was off the club. It hits a tree. It's basically in the fairway. How come we don't get those breaks?
Yeah, you can see it. I'm watching it just over my shoulder. BT,
you see that?
His left arm broke. That's why he missed hit that.
Yeah.
Because usually he's so rigid. Like, he's so strong and rigid. He keeps that left arm like a board. You could tell on the backswing it broke on him, and it forced a missed hit.
Man, it looks so uncomfortable to play the way he plays.
It does.
It's got to feel good.
So big.
Yeah. What's that?
It's because his body's so big.
Well, but not only that, even like, yes, he's well chronicled. 50 pounds will do that to you. But even like – just as he's getting ready to hit it, like he's tapping the ground, like he looks so intense. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a muscle discharge. So he's trying to get rid of the tension in his muscles. Okay. I remember this when I used to first started playing BT, and I was 215 pounds. It was so hard to turn, you know, because every muscle is so just like tight and constricted. Mm-hmm. You got to relax. Golf is a relaxed man sport. You know what I mean? You're not going up there trying to hit it as hard as you can and winning, unless you're Bryson DeChambeau, who is doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. I was wedge treats him this week, but he's still mashing, even if it's a bit a little left and right, playing a little military golf early. What else do we have? Tomorrow, we're doing local again tomorrow on The Fan, which will be sweet. WFAN here in New York and New Jersey, Connecticut, from noon to 2. Tiger's playing in the afternoon tomorrow, which is great because if he had a morning tee time, less time to get that back stretched out.
Yeah.
A little warmer temps on Friday. I mean, if Tiger comes out and puts up a -2 or -3, this weekend is going to be insane.
He did -2 today. He did 68 today, right?
Yeah, 68. 68 but it's a par
today.
70.
It's par 70. Even though it's long, but it's still a muni. So par 70.
Par 70.
Put up a 68. Yeah, if he goes sub 70 again, and if he goes like really sub 70 because he can figure out how to stay in the fairway, what was that stat that you get? In first 10, I know he only hit one, right?
He went through one stretch where he missed 9 fairways in a row.
Yeah, that's right. And still shot 2 under.
He's a supreme iron player, and he's creative. And up until the last year or so, he generally makes his putts. I mean, he's been a clutch money. He's a great leg putter. He never misses the short ones up until this year. And, you know, he make an adjustment. He's starting to bang him in, and we'll see. I mean, there's a long way to go. But Tiger Woods being in the red one round in, you could start worse if you're the PGA and CBS and everybody involved that wants to see golf and Tiger do well.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Good job today.
Likewise.
Both shows.
Do it again tomorrow.
You know it. We're back tomorrow. Deesa, how much time we have left? I'm sorry. Oh, we got 45. That means I got to vamp a little bit. Hop on in, Teak.
You call it a vamp.
Saddle up, partner. Pick him up.
What was that show? I Love Lucy.
Oh, yeah. Great one. City I mean, woman 6, 7 years
you.
Old. But
going to vamp you. But no, they had a vamp thing. City woman going to vamp you. You remember that? You don't remember
and
that?
And I used to watch that with my mom all the time. When I stayed home from school sick. I don't remember that
maybe
line.
Maybe it wasn't I Love Lucy. Maybe it was something else. But when you say vamp, that's what I think of.
Lucille Ball. Oh, my God. It was great. Fred Nethel. Are you kidding me? Have a great Thursday night. We will catch you tomorrow. Remain safe, sensible, and sane. Enjoy the golf. And we'll see you tomorrow. Peace. Gotta go.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.